Support for 89.7 comes from Weiland's Market, an independent family-owned market in Clintonville since 1961, offering meats and seafood, specialty groceries, prepared foods, spirits, and more. Information at weilandsmarket.com.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The temperatures will drop this week. Thanksgiving is just around the corner now, and the winter holidays will come and go before you know it. But the garden, it is always there, waiting for your TLC. What does that mean in the late fall and winter, though? Joining us now is garden expert, author, teacher, blogger, and consultant, Ohio's garden sage, Deborah Kanapke. Welcome back.
Oh, so nice to be here. So nice.
It is. It's always, this is one of my favorite shows because I'm usually almost done doing, as the years go by and I learn more and more from you, I realize I'm done doing actually earlier on because you're an advocate of not ripping everything out of the garden and making it look perfect.
Correct. I tell my students perfection is not a noble goal.
When it comes to the garden.
When it comes to the garden. Shoot. And when it comes to housekeeping too, right?
Good point.
Come to my garden. Come to my house. It won't be perfect. I just don't wear the white gloves.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I was taking down just some of the remainders of things, especially earlier in the season. I was taking down diseased peony leaves, obviously getting the powdery mildew out. And now I'm kind of walking around and the cold has hit and there are plants that, like the annuals, the true annuals, taking those out or at least just clipping them, leaving the roots in the soil.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I will leave the tops of them, depending on where I am in the garden, right there on the ground. And by spring, they're mostly gone.
Right. How do you know what is diseased and what's not? Anything moldy should be taken out. My milkweed still looks nice and crisp and brown. Should I just leave that there and let it crumble? And
the with milkweed, since our monarchs go somewhere else, they won't have any eggs on there. And if they do, they've probably already frozen. Our swallowtails will sometimes, I don't think they'll lay eggs. No, they won't lay eggs on those. So you're probably okay at taking those down. What you have to be careful with a lot of perennials, though, is don't bare the crown. Don't take it all the way to the ground because then, those stems are hollow. Mm-hmm. So any water, whatever's going to go directly into the crown and could be a rotting issue. Also, and I cannot remember where I read this, but having some stems up allows there to be sort of a layer of protection, interrupting the wind just sweeping across your crowns. And being somewhat of a lazy gardener, it's really not laziness. It's just trying to think of, well, what do I really have to do to go into the fall and into the winter and get ready for spring? I'm already thinking towards spring. Well, this is something I'd rather leave till spring. This is something I really need to do now, especially disease. And how do I tell? I look for things that have been eaten and munched. I look for possibly eggs on the underside of plants. Since I'm not very good at recognizing which eggs go to which insect, I will put the eggs upright in the compost pile so they can eat over there in the compost pile. There is one area I do not take down, and that's my nursery. My nursery is this wild area off in the corner. And I even tell people, this is my bug and bird nursery, and it's where I'll cut down thin grasses and leave them there, and I'll see birds fly away with grass for their nests. And I'll do that midwinter because some of them start building nests early in the spring, and I really don't know when they build. So, it's all these kinds of things I think about as I go through the fall and winter because I'm out there in the winter doing things, cutting old plants down. The grasses finally took a hit with the snow, and so I'll take them down too. But again, 8 to 10 inches. I don't like to take things down to the ground. And new growth comes up, hides it, who cares?
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Ohio's garden sage, Deborah Kanapke. Questions or comments about your winter garden coming up? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. How much does your planting and what you do in your garden depend on weather predictions and that sort of thing.
Weather predictions.
<Yeah.
laughs> I know. It's like, okay, what do we... Do you know I've heard about 6 different weather predictions
this
winter.
This is rough this year. It's been bad how much is... And we're all, I think, more focused on it because of what happened last year.
Right. I will tell you, the birds have been eating on our suet feeder like there's no tomorrow. So I watch the animals.
And what does that tell you?
They're bulking up.
Oh, okay.
They're bulking up. That tells me. Now, if you really want to know bird behavior, you have to talk to Jim McCormick because he'll give you all the skinny on that. But when I see animals really bulking up, when I see big caches of acorns, to me, the animals seem to sense something or you know, and a lot of it may be getting ready, like normal getting ready, like all of us do. But I base my planting pretty much... When I think the last frost is going to come, and I usually tell for planting perennials, be done by September 30th. For planting your bulbs, be done by October 30th. However, I have planted my bulbs on Christmas Eve one year. I think I mentioned that once before on the show. I wouldn't recommend that.
If the dirt gives.
Yeah, it's not a good idea, but I've forgot all about them, and there it was. So... If I think that I might get a longer fall, I might cheat. And honestly, I did put some perennials in after September 30th this year. My job will be to go out and push them back down on the ground if we get freeze-thaw cycles before they're rooted. And if I forget, then I'll find them on top of the ground in the spring. So, you know, but with weather predictions, there's all kinds. And I don't know if you want to get into that or not, but we could talk about a couple of them.
Yes. Well, yeah, let's talk about what the ones that you pay attention to.
All right. Well, I found a new one this year. This one was from the Farmer's Almanac. It's reading persimmon seeds.
Wow.
So if you open up persimmon seeds, the embryos will either be in the shape sort of like a fork, a knife, or a spoon. And according to, Melissa Bunker of Star, North Carolina, otherwise known as the Persimmon Lady, she checked a whole bunch of them, and all of them were spoons. Now, here's the bottom line. If it's a knife, it's a cold winter. If it is forks, it is a mild winter. And if they're spoons, there will be a lot of snow. And all of them in this picture are spoons. So I don't know if the audience can see that.
They are all perfect little spoons.
Little perfect, every single one. She said she's never seen so many spoons. Now, granted, this is in North Carolina, so maybe they'll get it and we won't. But it's predicted that the polar vortex is going to push a lot of cold air down on us. And I've heard lots of snow, no snow, really, really cold, not as cold as last year, but I haven't heard anything about it being warmer or less, or a lot less snowy. So we're going to get snow and cold some way, whether it's as cold as last year, as much snow and shoveling as last year, I don't know.
Are you a woolly bear or woolly worm or whatever you call them?
They're so cute. Interestingly enough, the coloration, the bands have more to do with their genetics and how much moisture there is, what they've eaten, etc. So I remember hearing when I was a kid, if there was more black, we were going to have a hard winter. And then I heard if there's more red, we're going to have a hard winter. So I think it's a 50-50.
Dan in Columbus, you're on the air with Deborah Kanapke. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have actually 3 quick questions. Two, I bought... some store-bought grapevines and a blackberry bush a couple years back. Actually, this would be the third winter. And I really like to know how far back to cut them because I seem to cut them back a lot, and at least with the blackberry bush, I don't get much fruit the next year. And I don't know if that's a result of that or as a result of simply being, you know, the varieties of weather. The other question is relates to morning glories. We have a backyard which gets taken over by morning glories every summer. And I'm wondering, besides pulling them out as rapidly as you can, which is never fast enough, is there anything that we can do in the fall?
Not really. What you have to make sure is that any that you've missed, they set seeds so quickly, you've got to get rid of those seeds. So that's the morning glory question. For the grapevines and the blackberries, you need to check to see if they are the type. You have to look up the type if you still have that name. Find out if they fruit on old wood or new wood. The raspberries, I know this is really important. Blackberries, I'm trying to remember. I usually prune mine back so they're not terribly wild. I'm trying a new type this year of thornless blackberries. So I'll let folks know as that unfolds. But with blackberries, you don't prune them all the way back. I know that you can prune back the ones harder that have already fruited for you. And you know what? I might put something up about blackberries on Facebook.
Could you mention raspberries, too, when you do that?
Yeah, blackberries and raspberries will do. And then for grapevines, if you're trying to get heavy fruit set, you're going to do some pretty heavy pruning on your grapevines. There are some excellent books on that, and also the OSU fact sheet, which you can find I'm thinking of the Beagle, the bygl.osu.edu, but also the plant fact sheets from Ohio State, if you put those into
the
Google.
The extension.
Mm-hmm. And right now I'm not thinking of the address. But it's better if you see them than for me to describe how you have to cut off and make a, depending on what your trellis looks like, make the cut so that you get new growth that will go on the trellis and give you lots of grapes. And I hope that helps. And I will put that fact sheet on Facebook also.
Okay. All right, Dan, thanks a lot for that call. Why are some plants meant to be pruned very low and others not? How does that work?
It depends on how they fruit. It depends on the varieties. If you look at California grapevines, they prune them back hard.
I've seen that.
Yeah, and that they want maximum fruit production. If that's what you want, and some people want a beautiful trellis with grapes overhead, and if the grapes come and, you leave most of the grapevine there so you get this beautiful trellis, that's great. But there's a difference between the beauty of it and the grape production, although I will tell you, it's really gorgeous watching grapes grow in Oregon and California and how they, all the new growth.
The tendrils.
It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
So, and then with raspberries and blackberries, we have primocanes, which means, and I get this mixed up, but there are some raspberries, once they bloom on that stem for that season, that stem's done. You can cut it down. Again, I don't cut them down all the way. I usually leave a couple inches. I don't like to go to bare crown. But some raspberries only bloom on new wood, all new wood. So last year's canes, get rid of them.
Okay.
Because they're just going to be tangled up and
But you have to look up what kind of raspberry
mm-hmm.
it is.
You do. So make sure you know the name or at least, or do some experimentation. You'll find out soon enough if they are on first-year canes or second-year canes fruiting.
Okay. My guest is Deborah Kanapke, gardening expert, author, blogger. If you have a question or comment for Deborah, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can check out our Facebook page and post it there, or you can tweet us at WOSU All Sides. If you can do it in 140 characters, more power to you. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. My guest this hour is Ohio's gardening sage, Deborah Kanapke. She's written many books. She is a blogger. She teaches. If you have a question or comment for her about your garden, now's the time to call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Jerry in Clark County, you're on the air. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning, Deborah.
Good morning.
And I'm in Clark County Master Gardener, and I have a little blue stem plant that I think I bought in a 1 gallon pot up in Illinois, but I just love the thing, and I've pulled seeds off of it this fall. What's a good way to propagate that from seed?
If you are going to scatter your seed, make sure that you leave your pots outside. Little blue stem wants a cold treatment. So if you take the seeds off and bring them inside, they need to be in the refrigerator at least for 6 weeks. But I think it's just easier to seed them into the pots right now. Just make sure you put some kind of netting over it. Otherwise, you'll have squirrels, chipmunks, and whatever digging in your pots and destroying your little seedlings.
What is blue stem?
Little blue stem is, I love the Latin name, Schizacarium scoparium. Anyways, it's this beautiful upright native grass that turns into an absolutely gorgeous maroon scarlet fall color that I wish more people would use in their garden. I mean, get rid of this is going to get me in trouble. Get rid of your lawn. Put bluestem all across the lawn. If I did that in my neighborhood,
it won't get you in trouble. People just won't do it.
That's right. They won't. They'll just say, "Oh, that's just she's just being crazy again."
Yeah, crazy Deborah Kanapke. Mm-hmm. Jerry, thanks a lot. Hope that helps. We have an email from Robin. She writes, "My question is how to care for my rosemary plants. I have always transferred them to pots and they always die. I really want to have herbs for Thanksgiving and it's supposed to get below freezing in the next week. Should I leave them in the ground and just cover them? Or what's the best way to transfer them to pots and keep them from dying?" First of all, Robin, I'd just like to say that you've just that's like the definition of insanity. You've always transferred them to pots and they always die. Deborah Kanapke, is there a way to do that? Or I've clipped a lot of my rosemary down now and I'm just drying it for Thanksgiving.
But she wants fresh herbs.
She wants fresh. Fresh is good.
All right. So, Robin, here's what you do. Rosemaries will easily go down to 10 degrees Fahrenheit. So as long as our mercury doesn't go below 10 degrees, those babies are going to be fine outside. It's when we get below that's when they start croaking. So if we don't get below that for Thanksgiving, you will have fresh rosemary. Now, when you transplant them out of the ground, the thing is they go through shock. Rosemaries don't like to be inside. They really like full sun. They like breezes. Once you bring them into our dry, breezeless houses, they start getting black sooty molds, et cetera.
They get sad.
If you do want to bring one in, then you need to put it in a cool room in front of a sunny window. Hold back the watering. Don't let it go completely dry, but don't keep it wet. And keep your fingers crossed. Or you can go to a nursery right now and get one that they have already in a pot.
Shaped like a Christmas tree.
or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then just clip off of that for Thanksgiving. It'll last until Thanksgiving. It's about the end of December when they really start croaking.
Yeah, I've gotten those before, too, for the same reason that Robin does, because I want to have fresh rosemary, and I haven't had until this past year. Mm-hmm. Have not had good luck with my rosemary where I live right now, but I finally got a big bumper crop. I'm very, very happy.
Now, this was a good year for rosemary.
But if it gets below 10, can you cover them and protect them?
You can cover them and protect them probably down to about zero. But the issue is going to be is that the ground's just going to get really cold. If we really get the winter they say we're going to get and the ground starts freezing, the rosemaries are going to say we're done.
Okay. Email from Sue. She says, "I have a new this year knockout rose tree and bush. What's the best way to winterize them?"
You do not have to winterize a knockout rose. Now, they did take a hit last winter, but their roots were great. They came back. If anything, what you want to do is if you have long rose canes, snip some of those off so they're not breaking against each other in winter winds. But I don't prune my knockout roses until the early spring. Depending on the season, early to end of March. When you start seeing new growth and seeing where the canes are actually most viable. So if you're going to do any covering, you can take some needles from pine trees or leaves and put them around the base of the plant to a depth of about 3 to 4 inches. But honestly, you really don't have to do that. Don't be a neat freak in the garden unless you had some disease symptoms on your knockout, like black spot or anything like that. Make sure you get all of that out of there. Otherwise, that will reinfect your rose next year. And I hope that was what you needed.
Okay. Email from Eric in Clintonville. "I planted some smoke bush in my front yard and want to either keep them under 4 feet or preferably train them into one or two trunk bushes, little boxes. Can I do this?"
Oh, yeah. Smoke bush is easily pruned. You just have to keep after it. There is a
book. What does smoke bush look like?
That's the one that you can get it green or purple. Most people get purple. It gets really tall and has those inflorescences that fluff out.
Yeah.
It's actually the seed heads, and it looks smoky. So you can do that. You will be sacrificing your smoky look, though, because you'll be cutting off all of those stems that give you that really cool effect. There's a good book by last name Reich, R-E-I-C-H, and for the life of me, I'm not remembering his first name, on pruning. And I believe he will discusses smoke bush. If not, just put into Google pruning smoke bush for sort of a schedule. But you will be pruning them in the spring, possibly once or twice in the summer, and then any stray ones in the fall. But usually we say not too much in the fall. Otherwise, we're promoting new growth in the fall when we don't want to, because pruning says grow. But yes, you can easily choose your stems to do it, one or two stems, and you can make them into boxes, globes, whatever you fancy.
Email from Nancy. I have shrubs, Weigelia, that bloom from May through October. I've always heard you don't prune when a shrub is flowering. So then when do I prune this shrub if I want it to increase in fullness?
Good question.
Stump the expert. Time.
Well, the new Weigelias, or Weigelias, however you want to say it. I've heard it so many different ways. The new Weigelias have been selected to bloom continuously. So that is kind of a problem. You want to pick your time. What I would probably do is, after that big spring bloom that they come up with in May, is I'd give it a shaping. I'd do what, you know, look at it and say, you know, this is winging out over here. Let's take it back. Shape the shrubs somewhere in the June, July timeframe, and then let it rebloom. Again, don't be pruning it. Well, you could prune it back in the winter after the plant is dormant. So, and that's even better, because the leaves are off, so you can see where you want to prune the best. So that's coming up, end of November, into December, or anytime in the winter before the middle of February. You can prune it and shape it. That would be another good time to do it.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Deborah Kanapke, a gardening expert and author, blogger, known around in many circles as Ohio's gardening sage. If you have a question or comment, there are no calls up right now, so this is your big moment. 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's talk about what we can do with our protective mulches, like leaves or pine needles and that kind of thing. We've talked about mulching before, how you don't want to cover up the bottom of the tree and all that kind of stuff. Does the same go for it in the winter?
Mulches are, and it depends on what you're mulching. I could do a whole lecture. I could spend a whole 2 hours talking about mulching, different times of years, why we do it, how much, etc. This year, for the winter, I took pine needles and I mulched around my blueberries. It is right up, but it's fluffed. It's not flat. Mm-hmm. Some people mulch their hybrid tea roses. If you don't, you risk losing them in a really tough winter, but you do it after the ground is cold. So there are many different ways to mulch. I don't like to put bark mulch right up against anything,
right?
Because bark mulch has those organisms that are eating things up. The same could go for leaves, although leaves not quite as much. I have used leaves around some of my more tender shrubs, trying to get them established, and then it's tough love after 3 years. Like my, I put leaves all around my fig to about a depth of 2 feet.
Wow.
Yeah, to keep that bottom of my fig, and then the top dies, and one of these years I'll get figs. I have a beautiful, it was gorgeous this year, but only one fig. One.
Did that happen because of that late winter we had, do you think?
No. With figs, it's just that it just gets cold.
Okay.
And they're root hardy, but they're not shoot hardy unless you protect them. I know some people put up these wooden structures and then put canvas over them and everything, but I'm not going to do that.
Callers, be patient. We're getting to all of you, so hang in there. We're going to get to you. 614-292-8513 is the number to call. Email from Janet. She says, I have a sugar maple that looks very healthy, but I have found big black or dark brown spots on all the leaves about the size of a quarter or larger. Do I have a fungus or bug issue? Is something happening to the tree? I love this tree and its shade. Do we need to watch it in the spring? We seem to get this question every time.
Maple tar spot. And because it looks like somebody dripped tar on your leaves, it's mostly a cosmetic issue. It would be good to take all of those leaves away from the bottom of your tree. Here's where I'm advocating that you do a good cleanup, because it will come back otherwise. It may come back anyways. We had the perfect year for it. Cool spring, lots of rain, cool evenings. Maple tar spot fungus said yay. So just do a good cleanup. The tree will be fine.
Jerry in Reynoldsburg, you're on the air. Hi, Jerry.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, I've got a line of about 8 Technia arborvitaes, and they're about 8 to 10 feet tall, so they're pretty mature. And one of them in the center of the line is just turning brown, and it looks like it's dying. And when I can take the leaves between my fingers and crunch them up so they feel like they're real dry. But the other 7 of them are doing real good.
So is this particular arborvitae, are the brown needles all over it, like on the outside or just on the inside?
I'm not sure what you mean, but...
Because they have annual needle drops, so they'll lose their inside needles or leaves.
Oh, I see.
But if it's the tips that are dying, then you have a problem. As to what it could be, there are a variety of things sometimes, and there's no reason for it. There's a physiological reason. The tree just decides that it's time to die. But there are fungi that can attack an arborvitae, and what you want to look for are little black spots on those leaves that you're crumbling up. And I'm going to take a look to see if there have been any diseases on the horizon, and I'll put that up on Facebook for you.
Okay. Jerry, check out Deborah Kanapke's Facebook page when you get a chance.
Actually, it'll be on your Facebook page.
Oh, on our Facebook page.
I'm going to put it on your Facebook page.
Okay, well, All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, easy to find. We just hit 5,000 likes last week.
I saw that.
It was kind of weird. All right, Jerry, thanks a lot for that. Is there a danger if it is a problem with that one bush or tree that you want to get it out of there so it doesn't affect the other ones?
If it is a disease, yes. If it's a physiological problem or the tree for some reason has reached at the end of its natural life for whatever reason, then it is not a danger to the other trees. But if it is a disease, since there's a beautiful row of, you know, of them 8 to 10 feet tall, it could spread.
Email from Chris. It says, are there native Ohio plants that are both drought-resistant and the opposite, wet-resistant?
Interesting question.
It is.
Dry and wet-resistant. There are, we call those plants incredibly adaptable. Some of them we call weeds. Like Canadian thistle, we'll take wet and we'll take dry, but I bet that's not what you're asking about. And it is a native. There are plants that will do that. Many of them are in the daisy family. Goldenrods will take wet and dry.
Love goldenrods.
There's another one. Oh, gosh, all I can think of is the botanical name.
Okay, tell us the botanical name.
Well,
just show off.
Parthenium integrifolium. I'm sorry. The common name is not coming to me. And someone's going to say, oh, that is. It will take wet and dry. There are many plants. And you can look at what we call rain garden plants. And not the ones that need wet all the time, but the rain garden plants that are natives that we'll take that inundation of water from our garages or whatever in the rain garden, and then we'll take it when it's dry in the summer. Echinacea will do that. That's purple coneflower.
That's where my milkweed is.
Mm-hmm. Milkweed will take that as long as it's not wet for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. So a day, okay, fine. A week, not. There are very few plants that will take a week of inundation and then total dry. Mm-hmm. So if it's periodic and what you're thinking of is rain garden plants, take a look at the rain garden plant list and focus on the natives.
Beverly in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Beverly.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Fine, thank you. My question is this. This is a big question here for me. When I was a little girl, my great-grandmother's marigolds had that wonderful, pungent, aromatic sort of scent here. And nowadays, I go to the garden shops, I try to buy them, and I'm not getting that scent. I don't know if you would say scent, aroma, whatever, whatever you would call it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering, has that been bred out of them, or is there a place that I can go or mail or to or something, a mail order place where I can get them? Because I love that wonderful, aroma, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fragrance is one of those things that just connects us with our past and so many wonderful memories. I know exactly what you're talking about. A lot of the modern hybrids have that scent is not there. And so what you have to do is look for heirloom marigolds. That's going to be an interesting search because I'm not so sure. I know there are heirloom marigolds out there, and I know there's heirloom marigold seed, but I don't know who's growing them into plants. If you're looking for seed and you want to play with seed, take a look at, there's Fedco is a catalog. There's Baker's Creek Heirloom Seeds. There's Seed Search. There's Seed Savers, you know, all these catalogs that have seeds with heirlooms. That's where you're going to find your most fragrant marigolds. Who's growing them into plants? I'm not sure, but this is what you do, Beverly, is you go into your favorite garden center and say, you know, hey, I want some heirloom marigolds. Is that possible? But and you'll get those back and those memories, too.
Okay. Beverly, thanks a lot for that call. I'm going to go to... Molly in Newark right now. Hi, Molly. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm in my 20s, so I'm a fairly new gardener. And I have Rudbeckia, and I would like to save the seeds to spread them around in different areas for next year, but I have no idea how to do that.
Okay. Well, you are in luck because that is one of the easiest plants to grow from seed. All you do, and wear gloves because those seeds are sharp and it won't cause huge damage, but it's uncomfortable. Take the seeds off, put them in a container, and then go to where you want them for next year and scatter them right in the place where you want them. And they will self-seed for you beautifully. In fact, some people are concerned that they self-seed too much. But you've started with a great one. Another good one is purple coneflower. Good luck and have fun.
All right, Molly. Good luck with that. My guest is Deborah Kanapke, gardening expert, author, blogger, teacher. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. With me in the studio, Deborah Kanapke, gardening expert, teacher, blogger, author. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513. And Bonnie in Hilliard, you're on the air. Hi, Bonnie.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Welcome.
About two years ago, someone gave me a twig of a plant, said it was Baptisa. It was natural to Ohio, so I plunked it in a small front flower bed, and it's very low, and it seems to be taking over. Do I trim it? What in the world do I do with it?
Okay, first of all, Baptisia is about a 2 to 4 foot tall vase-shaped plant that is native to Ohio, and what you're describing does not sound like it at all. It sounds like you have some type of ground cover. Is there any way you can...
No, it is. Probably knee height, but it's getting, I could see the vase, but it's getting tall and it's getting wider.
Yes, it will do that. That's what it does. It can get about, a mature one can get 4 to 5 feet wide. So it's not running. I misunderstood. So basically, if you have Baptisia, this is a beautiful native plant of ours, but it is a big one. It blooms with blue blooms. Have you seen those in May?
Don't remember.
Okay. So basically, you cut it back each year. You can cut it back now. It's essentially done. Leave about 3 to 4 inches of the stem, but it's going to get bigger over time. I have one in my garden that is now 7 years old that is 4.5 feet tall and about 4.5 feet wide and a vase shape. And they do grow big. So they didn't tell you that, huh?
Sound like fit for a townhouse front flower bed, doesn't it?
No. You needed something smaller, maybe.
Right. So, okay.
Well, then you have to decide whether you're keeping it there or whether you're going to take it out.
All right. Good luck with that, Bonnie. Thanks for the call. Let's see. Carol in Westerville. Hi, Carol. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Last spring, my husband built me raised herb boxes to keep out the puppies and the groundhogs. And they stand 3 feet off the ground, and the boxes themselves are about a foot deep. And I'm wondering if my perennials are going to make it through the winter since they're not in the ground.
Well, it would depend on which perennials you have. And we probably don't have enough time to talk about that. But some perennials are extremely hardy, and 12 inches of soil will be just fine. For others, it won't be. So this will be an experiment for you this year to find out which one of those make it and which don't. You know, a lot of your daisies will be fine. Most things in the mint family will be fine. But if you have some persnickety plants, they might not be as happy. So I think you'll find out in the spring which ones will take it and which ones won't. And if there's any particular one you're concerned about, you can tell me, but it would be difficult to do the whole list.
Right. Okay, Carol, thanks a lot for that question. John in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking
my
call. Yeah, so I run a produce farm in Westerville, and I have a resource to leave with you. This is a website that's basically like Google for seed searching.
Oh,
very
good.
Helpful to find all kinds of seeds, and it's called pickacarrot.com, and I just wanted to leave that with listeners because I think they'd find it useful.
Elf, I will find that useful. you.
Check it out. It is very
pick a
convenient.
Carrot.
All right. Thank you,
thank
John.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Pickacarrot.com.
Well, I can't wait to get onto that.
that's really nice. Let's go to some emails right now from Karen. I have a small fenced circle in my yard with wild edibles, dandelions, purslane, wood sorrel, mullein, plus chives, sage, oregano. Would it be a good idea to cover this area with straw to be able to continue to harvest these throughout the winter, or would straw create an environment for bugs or molds?
Good question. I would use something more like Remay, although I know people have used straw. Well, you put straw, as long as it's loose. The big issue is if it packs down. And mm-hmm. if we get a snow, it will pack down and not have as good insulative quality. So you could put the straw on top and you can still harvest. Or you can use a product called Remay, put it on hoops, like low hoops, and you can still harvest. I had a friend.
Remay is
a fabric.
Okay.
A fused fabric. It's white, very thin. I would get the thinnest out there. And if we have these, you know, up and down temperatures, you could be harvesting many of your wild herbs until January.
Okay. I mean, we've got the hoops up, so I've been...
Yeah, the hoops. And then put that Remay over.
Okay.
You can use straw. I know some people have done that. I just have used Remay or none of the above and everything just dies.
Ellen in Oxford, you're on the air. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. I have a marathon of planting to do today. I don't know if there's 3 gallon, maybe, green giant arborvitae.
Okay.
You're not supposed to fertilize. I'm wondering, what can I add to the soil, the heavy clay soil? What can I add to it that won't cause a growth that will die if it's, you know, in the winter? I know it's not a good time to fertilize after, what, August or something?
Yeah, after September, after the middle of October. And we're past that. Although some would say that you could put some superphosphate in the hole for good root growth, because that still continues during the winter.
Okay.
But you have to read the label. Do not put too much in. The other thing I would do is not so much add compost to the hole. Dig the hole the correct size, twice as wide as the ball or the container, no deeper than the container or where it is in the plant is in the container. And then I would put compost on top. 3 inches of compost. Make sure that the compost is not against the trunks, about 3 to 4 inches away, but 3 to 4 inches deep, and let the organisms in the soil take that down to the plant, and then do that again in the spring.
Okay, Ellen, good luck. I just want to remind listeners, if you're listening to something Deborah Kanapke is saying, you don't have time to write things down or take notes, you can always go check out our website later on. We'll post, it'll be in our archives. We re-air tonight at 8 o'clock, too. But we're always in the archive. You know, there's always copies of the show in the archives, so fear not. email from David, what is the latest I can wait to dig up horseradish? And once dug up, can it be replanted?
the first part of that question I got. The second part I'm still thinking. So you can dig up horseradish as long as you can dig the soil. So in the middle of winter, you can go out and get horseradish. The issue is knowing exactly where it is when the tops have died down and not harvesting too much so that you don't have enough for this, you know, come back in the spring. Although since it's horseradish, that's probably not a problem. Can you put it back in once you've dug it up? If you put it back in immediately and haven't ripped off all of its roots, you possibly can, although I would be concerned that the growing conditions are less than optimal and that the horseradish may suffer. So the best thing would be is take out how much you want and try not to overtake. And if you take more than you want, then give it away to friends.
Okay. Pamela in Gahanna, you're on the air. Hi, Pamela.
Good morning.
Good
Great
morning.
Show.
Thank you.
My question has to do with GMOs.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Yeah, so I would like to buy plants and seeds that don't have the systemic insecticides in them. And how do you find those when you go to, like, your local nursery?
Okay, you have to ask the folks that are at the local nursery if they know if they're seed has GMOs in them. The other thing is to buy from sources that will not carry seed that have GMOs. One of them is Renee's Garden Seeds, and I know they're in most of our garden centers here. Also look for Seed Savers Seeds and Seed Exchange, Baker's Creek, Heirloom Seeds. None of those will allow GMOs, known GMOs, in their seed. And if you're ordering yourself, take a look at Fedco. They will tell you. They will have no GMOs, and they will tell you if it was organically grown or not. So it takes a little bit more research on your part, but the thing is ask questions. Always ask. And All right. Good luck.
Pamela, thanks a lot for that call. Let's see. Joanne in Upper Arlington. Hi, Joanne.
Yes, I have a question about Pachysandra in mulching. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. I haven't heard the whole show, but I tend to get mold or the stems turn black, and mm-hmm. I didn't know whether I should try and get all leaves and bark mulch out from around the Pachysandra or if that'll make a difference.
Pachysandra, I'm assuming this is the Japanese Pachysandra, the one that everyone has as a ground cover.
I didn't know you could kill it.
Oh yeah, you can.
Well, it doesn't get killed. Turns black. The stems turn black. Okay.
It's a fungal disease.
Fungal,
that,
yeah.
Yeah, that Pachysandra get. I have seen conflicting recommendations for that. The issue is that you do need to have the ground not be so wet. And in our spring rains, I mean, this was probably a good year for that stem blight. That blackened stem blight. Mm-hmm. If you see it, remove it. So go into your beds now, and you should be able to see that and remove all of that that you can and any mulch that's around that area because the spores are in that mulch. Do you need to remove all the mulch? That's going to be kind of hard because it's an evergreen plant. So if there's mulch on the outside of it, I might pull it away. And yet, it also is a protectorant. If anything, the mulch should be very thinly on the ground, about an inch. You really don't need any more than that. But the biggest thing right now is what we call cultural control. Get in there and get all the diseased parts out.
All right, Carol, thanks a lot for that call. And Steve in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a question. I bought some lupine seeds when I was up in Maine, mm-hmm. and I didn't know if I needed to plant them now or in the spring or propagate them some other way.
When did you buy them? This year?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because some of them are not that long-lived. Not knowing which lupin you have, I would imagine they need a cold treatment also. So if you put them in pots and have them outside, again, with some type of screen on top so the chipmunks don't take all your seedlings out, they should germinate for you sometime in the early spring. But they need that cold treatment. And I would not direct sow. I would try to keep track of where they are because otherwise when they come up, you'll miss them in the garden. So I like to do the put them in the pots, put them in some corner in the garden with screen on top.
Okay, Steve, thanks for that call. Sarah in Grove City, you're on the air. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there. I had found some geranium plants that someone had thrown away. They were out of their pots with just some loose soil around the roots,
so sad.
But they're still in pretty good shape.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom had told me years ago that she would hang hers upside down mm-hmm. in the basement
mm-hmm.
and then replant them in the spring. And I wondered, you know, can I do this? And what type of temperature needs to maintain, or do they need sunlight?
My mother-in-law does this every year. She takes them out of the pots, and essentially she hangs them upside down. And the first time she told me she did that, I laughed, and then
me
I had
too.
To eat my laugh because it works.
The lady that gave us the geraniums last year, mm-hmm. the heirloom geraniums, mm-hmm. what should I do with that? I've been wondering.
Well,
is so curious.
Mine's
Sarah.
Inside my greenhouse, so.
Well, tut tut for you. Mine's in my dining room now where I get the best sun.
And actually, that'd be perfect.
Okay.
You can do that. You can actually, if you want to, Sarah, you can pot them up. And if you have a very sunny window, they'll live through the winter. Just
okay.
trim them back some, you know, trim them back to, you know, above a leaf, about 4 inches, and you'll get all this new growth. But they need to have sun. And you
okay.
don't want to overwater them. Let them go almost dry between waterings, and then give them a good water and let them go almost dry. Sometimes that's once a week. Sometimes that's once every other week. It depends on the dryness of your home.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Sarah. Thank you. Jim in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Jim.
Hey, hi. Appreciate
hi.
It. Question about asparagus, real
mm-hmm.
quick. What do I need to do to, help it along, make it through the winter? It's the first year. I just planted it earlier this spring, and it takes a couple of years, I understand,
right.
before it starts producing. I just want to be able to keep it long enough for it to do that. So what should I do?
There really isn't anything you need to do to asparagus. I planted mine and did nothing other than to clean off, you know, the old asparagus stems. I have put some wood ash down. So if you have a fireplace and you have wood that is not treated with anything, you can collect that ash and sprinkle it over the area where the asparagus is. They like a more alkaline soil and the potash that is in wood ash. So other than that, there's really nothing you need to do.
All right. Thanks a lot for that, Jim. Email from Mike. We have a maple that's been identified as having blight. Are we being bad neighbors if we don't cut it down?
Blight. Okay, Mike. Blight is a big word. There are different types of blight. And if you're talking about the maple tar spot, that's not a problem. I need to look up blight per se, but if it's something that can spread to another maple that may be nearby, yeah, you probably want to take it out if it is a spreading disease to other maples. I don't know how much information you were told by whoever diagnosed that for you. Unfortunately, that is so general. I can't give you any more specifics than that. If you get more information, put it on the Facebook page, and hopefully if Ann sees it, she'll let me know and I'll get back to you.
Okay, so from Yolanda, do you recommend cutting down my pampas grass before winter, or is it better to leave it and trim it in the spring?
Pampas grass, I'm assuming you mean miscanthus. I like to leave it up because it's pretty during the winter, but if the snow takes it down, I will take it down to about 6 to 8 inches when it looks raggedy. Otherwise, remove it no later than the middle of March, because the new growth will be coming up when the soil warms
and
up.
And pushing it all out.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
And it looks a mess.
Jinx. Okay, so not a question, but a comment from Alex, and then we have to let it go at that. Thanks to everybody for all your great questions. They really were great today.
They were.
I appreciate it.
Excellent.
Email from Alex. This is a comment. He said, last Friday I led a volunteer event to remove honeysuckle from a local park. This opened up a space about 15 feet wide and 200 feet long.
Yay.
I have permission to plant native wildflowers, and one of them will be a little blue stem. I'm going to have fun planting milkweed, coneflower, and false sunflower, and all of the seed came from rain gardens in the same park. Yay, Alex.
Excellent.
That's awesome. Deborah Kanapke, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been great.
It has been. Thank you very much.
And maybe come back again later in the winter, and
okay.
we can talk about getting that spring garden ready.
because that's when you start thinking about it. Thanks to everybody. Thanks to the Allside staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurovich, assistant producer Rachel Quimby, production assistants Karim Shaban, Jolie Friedman, and Muyao Shen, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Alan DiCenzo is the composer of our theme music. WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla, and Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Don't forget to like us on Facebook so you can check out more helpful hints from Deborah Kanapke. Thanks again for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.